Hey, it's Michelle Beadle. That's right, the Michelle Beadle. You're welcome. You love talking about sports. I love talking about sports. You know the only thing cooler than talking about sports? Sports! And right now, all your favorite sports are on SiriusXM. I'm talking every NFL game, every game from the NBA, NHL, MLB, every NASCAR race, golf major, major conference college sports, and all the top games in the WNBA. If it gets your heart pumping, it's on SiriusXM. To start your free trial of SiriusXM today, visit SiriusXM.com/believe.
What's going on, everybody? Thank you so much for joining me here on episode 45 of the 90 Feet From Home Fantasy Baseball Podcast. We are presented by Underdog Fantasy, and I'm your host, Joe Orico. You guys can check me out over on Twitter, at JoeOrico99. That's where I share out all of my newest work, whether it be these podcasts, any articles that I write, updates on my Patreon. You guys can keep up to date with all of that by dropping a follow over at JoeOrico99. Like I mentioned off the top, we are brought to you by Underdog Fantasy. There's an amazing deal that just went live on the site yesterday in advance of the All-Star break and the Home Run Derby. So Gunnar Henderson's line for the Home Run Derby was set at 23.5 homers. There is a special on Underdog right now where you can get him at 0.5 homers. You can get that play to cash if Gunnar Henderson hits a single home run in the Derby. Feels pretty easy to me. If you guys go check out the link in the description of the episode and use my code Joe99, you'll get access to an additional special pick as well as a deposit match if it is your first time depositing on Underdog. So make sure you guys are not missing out on that. It was already a great deal to go and use the code beforehand, and now you're getting that additional Gunnar Henderson pick. So make sure you guys are signing up today on Underdog. Like I mentioned, there's a link in the description of the episode. But we are going to be going through Tuesday's slate. We had a much more full slate than we saw on Monday. Lots of great players to discuss and some disappointing ones as well, as you'll see in a minute. We're going to go through all that. And then later on in the day, we are going to be talking about the popular ads and drops. Of course, looking at Yahoo's waiver wire as we usually do. But let's start off with a bit of an ugly one, and it's Bobby Miller against the Phillies. 4 innings of 9-run ball, giving up 10 hits, 2 strikeouts. He also walked 3 batters, 21% on the CSW, 9.2% swinging strike rate. His velo was down across the board. The command is not good. He has not looked right in his starts since coming back. He's made 4 starts since coming off the IL, and they've mostly been pretty miserable. The one against Arizona was serviceable, 5 innings, 2 runs, but he walked 3 batters in that one. He's walked 3 batters in all of his starts since coming off of the injured list, and even before he went on the injured list. The 3 starts he made, there were 6 walks there as well. So command has been quite a problem for Bobby Miller this season. 13.5% walk rate. His first season of the big leagues last year, he had a 6.3% walk rate, which was excellent. And he'd always had pretty good command in the minor leagues as well. High strikeout, good command type of guy, massive stuff off the charts. This is a top-tier pitching prospect. He's technically not a prospect anymore, but he is one of the best pitchers who's 25 years old and younger in all of baseball. He's not right at the moment. There's something going on, and I think there's a decent chance Miller finds his way back onto the injured list, whether there's actually an injury or not, or if the Dodgers just say, okay, pause, we need to reset, we need to evaluate what's going on here, give him a break. I think there is a chance that that does happen. Now, he's not somebody I'm comfortable dropping. I've gotten a lot of Bobby Miller drop questions. It's a crazy year. I'm getting Corbin Carroll drop questions, Bobby Miller drop questions, things you wouldn't expect coming into the season, of course, but I think it's justified to at least consider it. Through his 29 innings this season, his ERA is 8.07. His whip is 1.83. So I get having the conversation, but when the talent level is this high, pitching in such a fantastic team to pitch for with that offense behind him, it really is a hard cut for me. I don't think I could do it unless you're talking about super, super shallow leagues. Even in a 10-teamer, I wouldn't really rush to do it because, like I said, I do think there's a chance he gets put back on the injured list, and then we do get to see, or then you do get the IL designation where it would be easier to throw him on your injured list as opposed to just dropping him or keeping him on the bench. Even if that doesn't happen, even if Bobby Miller does not go on the IL, he's not somebody that I would be comfortable dropping again, unless we're talking super, super shallow formats and there's an amazing player sitting there on the wire. Somebody just got dropped that you can't miss out on, and Bobby Miller has been your worst player. In a shallow format, I would understand it. Anything 12 teams and deeper, I think that he is still somebody to be holding on to just based on the underlying talent. there might be something wrong here with the arm. Until we actually hear that there is a problem and there's an injury, whatever, I'm going to have to think that Bobby Miller just needs to kind of get acclimated to the big leagues again after such a long time off. Remember, he did miss like 2+ months. So it's kind of understandable that it would take him a little bit of time to get right, but there is still something else there. Like, it's not just, oh, it was a little bit rocky. Like, there is something maybe a little bit more nefarious going on here, but it's hard to really know for sure. And I think if you're cutting him right now, there's a good chance you end up regretting it. There's still a lot of baseball in front of us. There's still 2.5 months worth of baseball. We're still talking about 70 or so games for most teams, 70, 75 games. I think you're probably a little premature if you're cutting Bobby Miller today. I understand wanting to, but the talent is still through the roof. I think there's something that they need to work out, whether it does require him to take a seat for a couple weeks or maybe making a couple starts in AAA and just seeing, you know, working things out there. But I think cutting him would be a little bit too extreme. Put him on the bench for sure. Like, I don't think anybody's really confidently starting Bobby Miller at this point. But I don't think that it would be justified in just fully dropping him. We've seen quite a few drops today on Yahoo. About 3,000, he's down to 82% rostered. It just feels a little much, especially with a matchup against Detroit coming up. Not that that would really impact it one way or another, but if you were seeing, like, his schedule, the next four starts were projected against great offenses, you might be like, okay, he's not been good. It's a tough schedule. Maybe then it's more of an easy drop. But in a matchup against Detroit, I think you might be starting him. You honestly might be starting him depending on your situation, but cutting him is probably taking things a little bit too far. A lot of people are dropping him today. I think I would give him a little bit more time. And honestly, seeing the Tigers, I might be inclined to throw him out there even with the struggles that we've seen. Let's talk about Ronald Blanco. And I have to say off the top here, we've talked about it a couple times this year, but I'm taking the L. I'm taking the big L on Ronald Blanco. I have been one of the bigger naysayers of Blanco among people who make fantasy baseball content. I've not been a big fan. I think a lot of people have generally called for regression, but it's been 17 starts, 103 innings, and we haven't seen any of that. There's been no sign of, oh, he's wearing down, the regression, blah, blah, blah. Like, there have only been two starts this year where Blanco allowed more than 3 earned runs, and it was 4 both times. Like, this guy is not getting blown up in any outing. Yesterday was against the Marlins, but it doesn't really matter who he's faced so far this season. He's been great against the good teams and the shit teams alike. Yesterday against the Marlins, 7 innings, 4 hits, 2 earned runs with 7 strikeouts and 1 walk. 32% CSW, 12.6% swinging strike rate. I feel like every time he takes the bump, it still makes me nervous. That's the thing with Blanco. There are still some concerns in terms of, like, buying in long-term. First of all, if you're, like, in a dynasty league and you have him, I think this is an easy sell. We're talking about a guy who is about to be 31 years old a couple months from now, who never really had any major league track record, and what he did was pretty ugly in 22 and 23. It was not good stuff. You're looking at a guy who has the lowest BABIP in all of baseball at 184. He's a top 3 strand rate at 86.6%. Not a ton of strikeouts at 23%, and the command is still an issue. Just got the walk rate under 10% yesterday for the first time in a while, I believe. It's at 9.9. So there are still some concerns here with Ronald Blanco. He gives up a decent amount of barrels, 9%. I think there is still a good chance that things don't end up going well for him rest of season. But it's really hard to really say at this point, because he's making me feel like a fool every time. You know, I do my starting pitcher chart, and I usually say, like, ah, oh, he's a little iffy today, whatever. I know that as soon as I've done this now, and I'm going and doing the whole Blanco's good, and I've taken my L, now I feel like that's when he's going to actually start to regress. But I think he's still a sell high. I honestly think he is still somebody that if you can get a top 50, top 60 player for him, odds are you probably can at this point based on the results so far. If you're just even looking at Yahoo's rankings, he's number 20 for the season, number 11 player over the last month. He's winning games. He's got a sub-1 whip. I just don't really see it continuing. Rest of season projections sometimes don't account for what we've seen in season. I think Jake Irvin is an example of that, even though he got roughed up yesterday. Don't think the projections have really taken into account certain things that we've seen from him this year. And there are certain cases where that does happen. But just looking at all the rest of season projections that are on FanGraphs, you know, he has a 2.53 ERA to this point. The lowest rest of season projection is from Steamer at a 4.38 ERA. The bat projects 4.73 from him rest of season. They're also calling for a whip in the 1.3 to 1.4 range. you know, that strikeout minus walk rate, they're projecting about the same, but it's not been very good. 13.5%. It's fine, I guess, but it's not like fantasy dominant ace type of player. There's just a lot of reasons to still doubt him. But at the same time, you have to tip your cap, to use an expression that my manager in Toronto, John Schneider, loves. You got to tip your hat to Ronel Blanco, because coming up at his age and doing the things he's done, he threw a no-hitter earlier in the season. He's been a brilliant, brilliant asset, and I fully was wrong on him to this point in the season. I still think it's very unlikely he keeps this going the whole year, but for right now, it's a massive L for Joe at this point. Let's talk about Nick Lodolo. Didn't have a great day against the Rockies. He looked decent, and then there was a rain delay, and then he came back out, and then it ended up being 3 2/3, 5 hits, 4 earned runs, 4 strikeouts, and 1 walk. 29% CSW, 13% on the swinging strike rate. It's a couple of subpar outings in a row for Nick Lodolo, and as you'll see, you know, it's not a lot of drops, but close to 1,000 people have dropped Nick Lodolo today in Yahoo. He was bad against Boston, tough start against Colorado. Some people in shallow formats say, you know what, that's it for me, I'm done. And that's why, you know, I feel the need to bring it up, just because you see those drops. And there's also another reason of bringing it up. It's because ESPN players, I know ESPN gets a lot of flack for their fantasy game, as they should. I don't think they really give a shit about the fantasy sports platforms. They care about betting, and they care about giving platforms to loud people who talk on TV. That's really ESPN's game at this point. But for people who play fantasy on the site, Nick Lodolo is 54% rostered, which is just absurd. He should be well over 80%. Even with the drops today on Yahoo, 82% rostered. So I think it is taking it a little too far if people are dropping him or ignoring him because of a couple of bad outings. Front of the rotation stuff doesn't have a ton of flaws in the profile. The main thing really is pitching in Cincinnati. But this is a guy who should be close to 100% rostered in all formats. I'm not going to be crazy and say it's actually going to happen, because you never see that happen. Even Ronel Blanco, who has been great the whole season, he's 90% rostered. That means there are still 1 in 10 leagues where Ronel Blanco is still sitting on the waiver wire. You're never going to get all the way to 100, or very rarely, unless it's early in the season. So maybe that's a bit of an unrealistic expectation. But Nick Lodolo, even on ESPN shallow formats, he should be in the 70, 80, 90 type of range. And on Yahoo, if you saw him got dropped anywhere today or last night, or people drop him later on, he is somebody that you absolutely need to be picking up. I think he's an amazing rest of season dynasty type of play. I think the future is very bright. And if you want some short-term comfort, his start, last start before the All-Star break, is going to be against the Marlins. So you're looking for somebody who is potentially, you're going to luck into a stream, or you're going to luck into a rest of season asset. Either way, Nick Lodolo should not be floating around on really any waiver wires as far as I see it. Let's talk about Jameson Taillon. Continued his great run against the Orioles yesterday. 6 innings of 2-run ball. He allowed just 4 hits, struck out 7, and walked 1. He had a 35% CSW, 12.5 on the swinging strike rate. He's been really excellent this season. 2.99 ERA, 1.16 whip, 72 strikeouts, and just 18 walks in 87 innings. That patented Jameson Taillon command has been really big for him this season. The guy doesn't really walk anybody, and he's never really been a huge walk rate guy, but 5% this season, 5.9 for his career. It's why he's been able to have success as a big league starter, despite not really having amazing stuff without having big strikeout rates. It's because of the command. Command really does kind of get ignored to some extent, but even with the success he's had and the great command, et cetera, I find it very difficult to buy into Taillon as a rest of season type of play. There's nothing, if you look at the profile, that's drastically different from any other season. He's at a 15% strikeout minus walk rate this year. That's generally where he's been. 15.1 last year, 16.3, 15.9, 14. He's always in that type of range. So nothing really there. The thing that does stand out, especially when you look at the last couple of years, is he's allowing fewer home runs than usual. Is that something that can sustain? Potentially. The projections don't think it will. He's been a 1.13 homer per nine guy this year. The last three seasons are 157, 132, and 150. That homer to fly ball number is sub 10%, when for his career it's been 12, 13%. So that's something that stands out to you. I mentioned the 2.99 ERA, but the estimators, 4.18 on the XFIP and a 4.15 on the Sierra. I fear that people are starting to look at Jameson Taillon and say, yep, he's a solid rest of season type of play. I can pick him up, I can trade for him, whatever. just because the roster rates are really starting to get up there on Yahoo. He's 44% rostered. We saw more than 1,300 ads today, and we've seen a lot recently. I just don't really think there is much rest of season appeal here for Jamison Tyone outside of certain streaming opportunities. I think that there are certain starts where he's really excellent in all formats and it's a good matchup, et cetera. You know, you're facing Oakland away from away, or excuse me, you're facing Oakland or Colorado away from Coors or some of those teams where he'd be a really good option. But I just can't look at him and be confident that we're going to get great results over the next 2+ months of the season. I think you can probably move him for a decent asset at this point. He's built up enough goodwill that you can actually sell high. And I think based on the ads, based on the way people are talking about him, based on the actual raw numbers, you can probably do fairly well for yourself. If you can net yourself a top 125 player for Jamison Tyone, 125, 150, maybe even a little bit better, I think you should absolutely explore doing that. I just can't see this run keeping up all season, especially when there's nothing really that different about him than previous years. And he's been fine in previous years. There's been years where he's been an all right fantasy asset, but he's a lot closer to a 4 ERA, if not slightly above 4, than he is to a sub-3 ERA. If you look over the years, he's always been 4.8, 3.9, 4.3, 4.1, 4.4. There's a couple of seasons in Pittsburgh early on where he was really excellent. And then there was the Tommy John that he had, and then he's never quite been the same since then. So he's fine, but unexceptional. And I think if you are playing in a 10, 12-team league, you can probably do better.
At your job, do you ever have to deal with a nose roller? How about a snub pulley? Well, if you're installing a new conveyor belt system, dealing with the different components can sound like you're speaking a foreign language. Luckily, you've got a team ready to help. Grainger's technical product specialists are fluent in maintenance, repair, and operations. So whenever you want to talk shop, just reach out. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Let's talk about Zidane Raffaella, and this one's going to be a little bit of a longer conversation. If you guys have seen what's been going on my Twitter this morning, people are very upset about a take I made. So let's talk about Zidane Raffaella. First of all, I think that he is excellent, and I think that what we've seen so far this year is, you know, leading towards what will probably be a very close Rookie of the Year race between him and Wyatt Langford. I do think Raffaella, because he's built up enough goodwill where the counting stats are excellent for him, he leads all rookies in runs and RBIs in the American League, second in homers, second in stolen bases. I think it would take quite a lot from Langford to take that, even though I know he's favored. I know he's favored in the betting market, but Raffaella has been excellent for the whole season, pretty much. There have been some times where he's been a little bit disappointing, but for the most part, I mean, Zidane Raffaella, if you look at the Fangraphs player raters, the number 82 ranked player for the season as a whole. He's hitting .247, 44 runs, 11 homers, 51 ribbies, and 11 stolen bases. He's done this predominantly batting ninth in Boston. He's not been a guy who's, you know, top of the order. We're going to mention Ben Rice later on, who's, you know, really, like, the power has been great for him, but also batting in front of Soto and Judge has been a huge factor. With Raffaella, he's batting ninth. They're not really doing him any favors. Like, yeah, you get turned over to the top of the order, and that's helping out with runs, 44 of them. But he has 51 ribbies in just over half a season batting ninth. That's pretty damn incredible stuff. You also got to look at the eligibility. Shortstop and outfield does not really come around so often. You see it in certain players, but it's a very rare designation that is very, very useful for fantasy purposes. I think there's tremendous upside here. If the Red Sox ever put him at the top of the order, if the Red Sox ever move him up at all, I think that would just lead to more opportunities. Now, I don't understand why the roster rates are still kind of just whatever with him. He is 64% on Yahoo. He's gone up 4% over the last week, and today he's been added a little bit, about 1,000 ads all told. But he's somebody that I feel still gets kind of left behind from a fantasy conversation. Maybe people aren't fully, yeah, he's a new guy. He's not somebody who's established. So maybe people are thinking, okay, he's a rookie. Not sure if he can keep this up. And then the responses I get, because somebody posted his Baseball Savant screenshot. And there's nothing I hate more than this type of analysis. And I'll preface this by saying, you guys, if you listen to the show regularly, if you listen once a week, twice a week, every day, you follow me on Twitter, whatever, you know that I'm not just going, yep, this guy hits home runs, he's a good pickup. Oh, yep, this guy's got a low ERA. Like, I do a lot of analysis. I do this for a living at this point. I don't just go out and say random shit because, well, I think this or I think that. Like, I do a lot of research on these topics. Zidane Raffaella is 23 years old. He was a top, depending on the list you looked at, top 60, top 70 prospect with amazing speed, great defense, decent power. And he's had success in his first real run at the big league level. And like we've talked about, he's like top three or top four in Cy Young betting odds. He is leading rookies in a lot of categories. He's done a lot of good things, plays in a good lineup, got a great home park. And yet people will quote the Savant numbers through 80 games of his career and say, yep, this is not a profile I'm buying into. And it drives me absolutely insane. Is he hitting the ball as hard as you'd maybe want? Probably not. You probably want everybody to be 70th, 80th percentile power. He's like 45 to 50th percentile barrel rate. The hard hit's not amazing, but in that ballpark, playing at Fenway, you are going to have many more home runs. I mean, many is maybe pushing it a little bit. But as a right-handed hitter at Fenway, you don't need to have like this monstrous power, and we've seen that from him this season. He's got 11 home runs in half the year. He's pacing towards about a 20 home run season. Maybe he ends up with 16, 17, 18 in that range, but the power hasn't been something that has been a big problem. 7.4% barrel rate is fine. It's not amazing, but it's fine. People will talk a lot about the strikeout and walk numbers. Oh, he's striking out 27% of the time. He's not really walking a lot. He's been a 17, 18, up as high as maybe 21, 22% strikeout rate guy in the minors. So yeah, you're going to go up a couple of points when you first debut. And then if you look at those projections that we referenced, he's projected to go down from 26.7, about 2 to 3 points, depending on the system, rest of season. He's not walking enough at 3.3%. That's never been a part of his game, though. He's never been a big walk rate guy. In the minors, 5, 6, 7% type of guy. 3.3 is not great. Again, a number that should get better the more he adjusts to major league pitching and gets used to the big leagues. Because, again, we're talking about a 23-year-old, and this is his first go-around at the big league level. And you have people who want to write him off because there's a couple of blue lollipops on Baseball Savant, and it drives me nuts. Like, I don't want to come off as sounding ignorant about analytics or about advanced data or about Baseball Savant or any of those things. Like, that's not what I want to do. But when you're posting a screenshot, especially the person who posted it, conveniently edited out the things where he is 95th plus percentile, sprint speed, arm strength, base running value. Those things were very conveniently excluded from the post. And then you have all these people jumping on to say, yep, Raffaella, you just can't buy into it. There's a lot of blue on the Baseball Savant page, and then they wipe their hands and that's it. I wonder if they feel the same way about Jackson Churio. Jackson Churio, who's also not having the greatest season. I mean, it's not been terrible for him. 9 homers, 10 stolen bases, .247 batting average. The Baseball Savant page looks like shit. It's not good. It's maybe slightly better because of the bat speed and the hard hit are a little bit better than Raffaella's. But everything else is very, very blue. Are you guys telling me that Jackson Churio is also somebody that we should just write off and say, oh yeah, it's going to be very hard for him to make improvements, et cetera, et cetera? No. You don't read too much into Savant screenshots when it comes to anybody, but certainly not when you're talking about young, up-and-coming prospects who do have top 100, if not higher, fantasy upside. We've seen it from Raffaella as a rookie when we have acknowledged that, yeah, there are things he could be doing better, and he's still been a top 80, 85 player for half a season. Savant does not give certain context about things, especially when people exclude things for their narrative, but that doesn't include the ballpark, especially like it there. You can look at ballpark factors on Savant, but when you look at a player's page, if you go and look up Zidane Raffaella, Baseball Savant or StatCast, you are not seeing the park factors or the team factors around them when you're looking at these pages. And those are massively important things when evaluating a player. Then you also have to factor in, this is not who he's going to be. There is potential and a lot of potential for growth with these guys. Raffaella and Churio are the main ones that come to mind. But any young player, like I wish we had StatCast data in 2011 so I could see these people and their opinions on what Mike Trout was going to become. Because Mike Trout was sent back down after his first call-up. And if you got, like I played a lot of MLB The Show. This is not really that important, but in MLB The Show, the first year where Trout was a member of the Angels, He was like a 64 overall player. He was a nobody. He was somebody that if you wanted to go in and play as Trout, you had to go and manually bump him up or wait for updates. He was not good in his first little go-around, and now Mike Trout is one of the greatest players in history. I am not, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying Rafael is Trout or should be compared to Trout, but I think that we need to really, really pump the brakes on just writing these guys off from a short sample. I'm not even looking at it right now, but I'm guessing Jackson Holliday's StatCast looks like absolute dog shit right now at the major league level. Are you telling me that Jackson Holliday is another guy that we should wipe our hands of and say, this is who he is? Oh, well, I guess he's a 50% strikeout rate guy. No, it's never good to focus too much on baseball savant, but specifically for young guys, it is just a totally unserious exercise, specifically in half a season. I don't want to go too much farther than that, but that is my opinion on baseball savant. I use their stats. We talk about barrel rate all the time. We talk about hard hit rate. We talk about strikeout minus walks. But in reality, a lot of those things are telling you the same thing. Expected slugging, average exit velo, bat speed, barrel, hard hit. Those are all power numbers. They're telling you how powerful the guy is, essentially. Chase, whiff, strikeout rate. Okay, they're all essentially telling you a lot of the same things. People take these lollipops, and yes, we call them lollipops because that's what a lot of people call them, and they read into it as like it's gospel, and it's just not. It's really not, especially for a young guy who can and almost certainly will develop into a better player than what we've seen. And like I said, what we've seen already is a top 80 overall player. So if you want to leave him on your waiver wire, you can go ahead. I've made the case for him. I think he's a really, really excellent player who's just going to keep getting better.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you sell everywhere, from their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system. Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S., and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/westwoodone, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/westwoodone now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/westwoodone.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
Let's talk about Reese Hines. He's been pretty damn exceptional in his first couple of big league games. Two games, two massive home runs for him. Now, there are strong points on both sides of the ledger here. The power-speed combo we've seen from him in the minors is incredible. If you look at what he did in 2023 at AA, 2024 at AAA, like, we're talking about, so we'll start with the AA numbers, 23 and 20 in terms of homers and stolen bases. He batted 270, came up to AAA in 77 games this year, 13 homers, 12 steals, and a 216 batting average. There's one thing that really I think is going to hold him back, and that's the strikeouts. The strikeouts are like Joey Gallo type of strikeout rates here. in the minors. 38% strikeout rate in AAA is atrocious. You can't even do anything with that, really. Now, if he's able to work on the strikeout rate, then he could be actually a really, really excellent fantasy player, major league player. My comparison was Jose Siri, a guy with a lot of speed, a lot of power, strikes out too much, potentially could be a really great player, but does have a lot of things to work on. That's where I kind of see him. Could things break right, especially playing in Cincinnati? They could. But I think he is more of a, you pick him up short term, you may be hoping that he can cut the strikeouts, but really, I don't think there's a lot here. If you're playing in those really shallow leagues that we've talked about a lot, where pickups are almost impossible unless the guy is like, you know, Jose Miranda probably took a while to get picked up in a lot of shallow leagues because you just don't have room. With a guy like Rhys Hines, I doubt a lot of you guys really do have room. Maybe you're desperate. Maybe you're shuffling guys in and off the IL and you're thinking, okay, he's hit a couple homers. I'll pick him up, see what I've got. But I think those strikeouts are really kind of where the conversation ends. 38% strikeout rate in the minors suggests that you're probably going to be somewhere above 40 at the major league level. I think it would be very, very tricky for him to actually maintain fantasy success with that. Like I said, if he does improve, if we see the whiffs kind of get cut down a little bit, that would be a different story. But for right now, I think that he is much more of a deeper league play than somebody that most of you in 10 and 12 team leagues really need to worry about. Let's talk about Michael Busch. He's been on a bit of a hot streak, and we've seen him climb back up to about 35% rostered on Yahoo. I'm not a huge, huge fan of him. Even though he's fairly solid overall, first base, third base eligibility, I think there are some definite problems when looking at Michael Busch. First of all, we were just talking about big strikeout rates. Michael Busch is 32% on the strikeout rate. Not impossible to have success there, especially with the fairly decent walk rate he has. But it's still a problem, and I think it will still lead to low batting averages. Now you're going to say, Joe, he's batting 273 this year. He's running a 382 BABIP, which is incredibly high. He should be somewhere, if you just look at projections, 310 to 330 type of range. He's not a burner, so you're not going to get those extra base hits on ground balls like a lot of the quicker guys who run higher BABIPs will. I think this is a massive BABIP for somebody like him, and we should expect it to come down. Probably 50, 60 points rest of season. That's not to say the batting average will come down 50, 60 points, but he's probably a lot closer to a 240, 250 hitter than he is 273. So that's kind of the big one for me there. And that's what is leading to a lot of fantasy value. If he was hitting, you know, if he had 12 home runs and he was hitting 240, I think there wouldn't really be that much interest in him here. He has 33 ribbies in more than half a season, 42 runs. At this point, we're pacing out to, you know, high 60s runs. Maybe he hits 70 to go along with maybe 60 ribbies and one steal. I just don't think there's really that much there that you need to be that interested in. He has a massive barrel rate, like massive, massive 12.4% barrel rate. But it's led to 12 home runs. It's just kind of uninspiring. And he's actually outperforming his expected slug. He has a 473 slug, 451 expected. So I just don't really think there's so much here. Obviously, if you play in any kind of deeper formats, if you are playing in 15-teamers, deep 12-teamers with corner, middle, infield spots, that's a different story. Standard 10 and 12-team players, I just don't really think there is a lot with Michael Busch. Is he somebody that's maybe worth starting when he gets hot and in the right matchups? Yeah, but I just, in terms of rest of season viability, I think he's a mediocre batting average. Maybe he hits another 8 home runs, doesn't steal for you. Runs and ribbies are not going to be great. I just think he's fairly mediocre, especially with a lot of cool third base options popping up recently. Brooks Lee, I know Noelvi Marte's kind of struggled a little bit. Maybe it's Miranda that you can pick up. There are options for you, and I think Michael Busch is somebody that should be more looked at in a deeper league context. Let's talk about Ben Rice. I mentioned him earlier. Continues to lead off for the Yankees. He had his 5th home run in just his 19th game yesterday, and it came against a left-handed pitcher. This guy has really, really surprised all of us, I think. But the main thing is you're batting in front of Soto and Judge. Like, it's almost a guarantee you're going to score when you get on base in front of those two guys. One of them is going to drive you in. It's almost a guarantee. I think as long as he is in that lineup position, the Yankees move him down the bottom of the order or his playing time gets cut or whatever, that would be a different story. And I think, like, let's say Rizzo, Stanton come back, maybe he loses some playing time. But for right now, If you need a catcher, I think that he should be considered at this moment a top 10 catcher as long as his situation doesn't change. That's a huge part of it. If he's batting sixth, you don't have that lineup lineup insurance there behind you, then it's not such a great situation. He might be a two-catcher viable guy at that point, but I think as of today, as of right now, Ben Rice is even viable in one-catcher leagues, and I think that he should be picked up where you're still seeing him pick up on some of this production, because in 60 at-bats, 9 runs, 14 ribbies, 5 homers, he's batting .267. That catcher eligibility is so huge for somebody who's not actually catching, especially a guy leading off. So I would be taking a look at Ben Rice if he's still out there on your waiver wire, and there's a chance he is. He's up to 65%. Lots of ads. We're going to get into the top ads and drops in a second, but if he's still out there, I would be definitely taking a look at him. Let's go to the ads of the day. Rhys Hines, like we mentioned earlier, doing some cool stuff in his first couple games. This is the biggest ad total I have seen in quite a while here on Yahoo for a single day. More than 15,000, and we are only talking about 3 o'clock in the afternoon here. That is a big boy number of ads. He's jumped up 23% on Yahoo, like we just talked about. I think there are a lot of flaws in the game here. He's probably going to be able to hit you a few more home runs. Like, the power, I think, is pretty legit, but you might get like a sub-200 batting average with 8 or 10 home runs, assuming that he's able to stick around. I think it's a little bit too risky for me to take a shot on him in shallow formats. In the deeper leagues, I do understand it, though. Michael Lorenzen, he's a popular ad today. He's starting against the Angels tonight. You know, he's one of those kind of guys we talked about yesterday in the conversation, specifically about Jose Quintana, where it's just, he's not that exciting. There's nothing really there that is so great for fantasy. He's not a big strikeout guy. The command is not good. Like, he has a 3.21 ERA, but he's drastically outperforming the estimators, 4.87 on the xFIP. His Sierra is pretty bad as well at 5.09. 17% strikeout rate. There's just like 6.3 strikeout minus walk rate is really just awful. I think that he's an okay deep league streamer just because of the matchup, but he's been added up in a lot of leagues recently, and I think that it is a mistake trying to trust Michael Lorenzen going forward outside of a really, really deep league. Brooks Lee is also among the popular ads today. It feels like every day this week he has been on this list. Easy to see why. He's batting .458 through his first 24 at-bats. He has a hit through every game of his career to this point. Now, they're playing a doubleheader today. The first half is going on right now. He's 0-2 so far. So maybe that does get broken today. But Brooks Lee is officially third base eligible on Yahoo. I think he was after yesterday. So you're getting third base and shortstop for a guy playing every single day. I think that there is some value here, but you also shouldn't get carried away and expect like a league winner type of player. There's not one real massive fantasy carrying tool with Brooks Lee. There's not massive power. There's not massive speed. Doesn't hit for the greatest batting average. But I think the overall picture is still a very productive player that should be picked up. You know, you're talking about third base a minute ago. If he's still sitting out there, I think that he is a very solid pickup at what has been a fairly weak position. I'd take him over Michael Busch. Straight up, I would take him over Michael Busch rest of season. Colt Keith, he's been very, very hot. We've talked about him quite a bit. Top 90 player for the last month, top 85, really. And he's been the number 2 player for the last week. I just think it's probably not going to be terribly sustainable with Colt Keith this season. I think that the pedigree is legit. Like, he's a great prospect. But I think there are some limitations for his fantasy value. We've talked about how the speed has been pretty decent, but 6 attempts in 81 games is not crazy. He's stolen 5 bases there. The power is pretty good, but nothing to really write home about. The batting average is okay. It's a bad park. It's a bad team around him. I think he's serviceable, but I do lean towards more deep league pickups with Colt Keith. I don't think that there's a hell of a lot there for shallow leagues for 2024, and I would take Brooks Lee over him largely because of that lineup. Minnesota's been a top 5 offense in baseball this year. Kind of surprised me when I heard somebody say that on a podcast yesterday, that Minnesota's a top 5 offense. Was it maybe Jeff Erickson on the RotoWire show? I'm not sure who said it, but Minnesota has been a lot better than I think a lot of us were expecting, and if you're getting a piece of that lineup, I think it's very, very valuable, a lot more so than a piece of the Tigers lineup would be, especially because I think Lee and Keith are not exactly a wash, but close enough where you would take the guy who has the better lineup around him for sure. Frankie Montas tonight against the Rockies, he's getting picked up quite a bit. Another guy I just don't really trust that much. I know it's the Rockies away from Coors, but that's the thing about pitching for the Reds is that you got to have a lot of shitty home park matchups. It doesn't matter who you're playing. Cincinnati is a home run haven for batters. I think Montas is okay in deeper leagues, but he's not somebody that I'd be running out to pick up. I think there's still a lot of problems with him, most notably the ballpark, but he doesn't really strike guys out anymore. The ratios have been kind of blah. So I think Montas is a pretty risky streamer tonight, even though the matchup is fairly easy on paper. Reese Olson, he is also getting picked up. This is a no-brainer for me to pick him up and roster him. We haven't talked about him in a while, but he's only up to 49% on Yahoo. He has been disrespected for most of the year. 3.22 ERA, 1.18 whip, close to a strikeout per inning, 89 strikeouts in 95 innings. I think the big thing here really is that he hasn't gotten wins. He's won a couple of games recently, two of his last three starts, but he's only won three for the entire season because the Detroit offense has been just garbage, and the only pitcher that they seem to show out for is Tarik Skubal. Everybody else gets the shit end of the stick. That being said, Reese Olson has been really, really good this season, and I think even though it's a tricky matchup against Cleveland, he has earned the right to start pretty much in all formats at this point. I think he's a fairly sustainable guy as well. You mentioned the ballpark factor kind of hurting the hitters in Detroit. It does help the pitchers, though. Comerica is a very pitcher-friendly park. If you look at the ERA estimators with Olson, they're all within the range of his actual ERA. There's no massive, oh, he's been super lucky. 354 xFIP, 296 FIP, 348 xERA, 376 Sierra. Over 15% strikeout minus walk rate. BABIP and left on base percentage are both in normal ranges. In fact, he's actually stranding probably a little bit low on the base runners there. 68.5 left on base, which is generally where he's always been in that type of range. But there is some room for it to go up a couple points as well. He's suppressing home runs and he's suppressing hard contact very well. So more so the barrels than the hard hits, but he's cut the barrel rate in half. Hard hits is maybe still a little bit of a problem, but like I said, that ballpark will help you out there. And even with the hard hit being a little bit higher than you'd like, homer to fly ball is 6.1. Homer per nine is 0.47. Will those things go up a little bit? They're projected to go up a little bit in the second half. But again, like the ERA projections, the estimators are all saying he's about a mid-three type of guy who will give you decent strikeouts with decent command. And I think when you also factor in the ballpark there and just the natural turn of how the baseball gods work, he hadn't won a game for his first like 16 starts, or he had one win in 16 starts and then a couple over his next three. You got to figure he's going to end up, especially with these results, you're going to see some more wins coming in the second half, assuming he doesn't completely fall apart. And I don't expect him to fall apart. I think Reese Olson is really good, and he's somebody that should be considered on all formats play outside of maybe the very, very shallow 10-team leagues. But Reese Olson has not gotten the credit he's deserved this season at all. Let's talk about Tobias Myers, also a popular pickup today as he is facing the Pirates tonight. I think he's very solid. The matchup is good. He has been successful this season. I think he's been a little bit fortunate. If you look at the numbers, 3.52 ERA, 4.08 on the xFIP, and the Sierra's 4.15. It's not anything crazy. Like, it's not like a 2+ run difference. He's maybe been a little bit lucky there. I think where he has been actually pretty lucky is the strand rate at 83% nearly. But that being said, you know, the strikeouts and walks are fairly average. Hard hit rate is pretty solid at 37%. I think in a matchup against a team like Pittsburgh, he's a solid, solid stream. Is he a must roster player? I don't think in shallow formats, just based on that low strikeout number that you're going to get from him, probably 21.5%. Like, it's fine, but it's nothing to write home about, especially in shallow leagues. I think he does skew towards more of a deep league guy rest of season. But for this matchup, I think you can pretty comfortably stream him in most cases here. It's weird to see, but Nick Pivetta is also among the top ads, even though he's already fairly rostered. But he's gone up from 75 to 78%. That's why you stay diligent on the waiver wire. Some people might have dropped Nick Pivetta after the San Diego start, or maybe after the Cincinnati start before that. Both of them went pretty rough for him. He showed out against the Marlins on July 4th. 7 shutout innings of 10 strikeout ball. And he is getting a matchup against Oakland tonight. So if you do have Nick Pivetta, you're absolutely starting him there, of course, no question. And if you're seeing him out on any waiver wires, he is definitely somebody that you should be picking up. Let's move on and talk about the drops. Number one is Dean Kramer. Bit of a tricky start for him against the Cubs. 7 runs, only 5 of them earned on 7 hits with 3 walks over 4 innings. And he also struck out 3 batters. Dean Kramer, I think, is generally kind of unexceptional. There are things that I do like about his game, but there's also some things that are concerning to me. So, like, his strikeout rate has technically gone up. Not technically, it has gone up. But it is very artificial when you do look at the swinging strike rate. He's up to, well, he was at 25% before yesterday's start. 25, yeah, I think it was 25 on the dot on the strikeout rate. That went down to 24%, which you'd say is still a very solid number. And it is a very solid number. But when you look at the swinging strike rates, last year was 10.2%. That led to a 21% strikeout rate, which is generally what it should. If you guys have missed any recent shows where we've talked about it, you can generally double swinging strike rate, and that'll give you an expected K rate. 10% swinging strike generally is about a 20% strikeout rate. His swinging strike rate has actually gone down from 10.2 to 9.4%, and yet the strikeouts have gone up to 24, which you would kind of expect from an 11-12% swinging strike rate guy, not somebody who's below 10. I think the ballpark will do him some favors, and obviously pitching for Baltimore is good for win potential. But this is a guy who has a pretty severe home run problem, who's allowed a 12% barrel rate, tons of homers on the fly balls he's allowed. I think there's not a lot here for shallow league players. If you are in a 10 or a 12-team league, should be treated as more of a good streamer than somebody that really needs to be rostered in all cases. Now, I thought he'd go down after he was at 42% yesterday on Yahoo, and he did. Like I'm saying, he's the most dropped player today. He's down at 36%. And that feels more correct. He is more of a situational streamer, a very good streamer in most cases, especially at home there with the park, with Baltimore, as people call it, which should help out with those home run problems in the long run. But he's still somebody that I think is more of a deep 12/15 team type of guy. Colin Ray, we warned against this one yesterday. I wanted nothing to do with it. 7 runs on 6 hits with 2 walks with just 3 strikeouts. He's not very good. He's been very lucky this season. I would try and trade him for whatever you can get back at this point and still try and use the 381 ERA, 122 whip to try and get something for him. But he's a comfortable drop for me in all formats, even in 15-team leagues. Maybe you could argue he's a hold in 15s and you stream him off your bench for certain matchups. I don't think there's a lot here with Colin Ray that suggests he is going to be a shallow league viable guy or even a deeper league viable guy. There's no strikeouts. The ratios are going to get bad. He has 8 wins, which has kind of helped out the whole value so far. But we're talking about a guy who has a dreadful strikeout rate. It's below 16%. The ERA estimators are all in the high 4s, low 5s. There's nothing really here in terms of Colin Ray. He's a very easy drop for me pretty much in all cases. Ben Lively had a pretty rough outing last night. 6 runs on 5 hits. He had a walk and 4 strikeouts over 5 1/3. And he's got dropped quite a bit today. Kind of understandable, but I don't think that he is that bad. Like, I think that he is probably more of a streamer, but I think he's decent enough where I'd probably lean towards holding him unless there's something pretty damn nice on the wire. Strikeouts and walks are fairly average, but he has some solid underlying stats outside of, you know, the home runs, which are kind of a bit of a problem for him at 1.42 homer per 9. But we're talking about a 417 xFIP, which is, it's not amazing, but 417 xFIP, 413 Sierra with decent strikeout minus walk rates. He's not somebody that I look at and say, you got to cut him. Like, he stinks. You got to drop him immediately. But I understand it in the shallow leagues. I do think that I'd probably give him another start or two as opposed to just looking at one bad one and dropping him because of that, because it does happen. Even the best of pitchers in baseball do have shitty starts. It does happen. Not saying he's anywhere close to one of the best pitchers in baseball, but I wouldn't just panic drop him because of one bad outing when most of what we've seen this year from Ben Lively has been pretty damn good. Is some of it a little unsustainable? Yeah, but he's not somebody that I'd say sucks and you got to cut him everywhere. He's been very good, and I wouldn't read too much into just one start. Bobby Miller, we led off the show with Bobby Miller. But he is among the popular drops today as well. 2,800 of them. Like I said, I think it's a little premature to be giving up on him at this point. The talent is so great. Pitching for the Dodgers, you know, unless there's really a can't-miss player on a shallow waiver wire and you're in a 10-team league, 8-team league, and you say, you know what, I can afford to miss out on a potential rebound. I need the production right now. It's a shallow league. I can churn, etc. Then I would maybe be okay with it after doing some justifying to myself, but it's not a situation where I'm looking to drop Bobby Miller. Lots of other pitchers getting dropped here. We don't need to get into too much detail on. Joey Estes, yeah, He got his tits lit by the Red Sox yesterday. 8 runs on 7 hits with a walk over just an inning and 2/3 with 1 strikeout. We've seen flashes of good stuff from him, but yeah, pitching for Oakland when you're not really striking guys out, you have miserable ratios for the season. I don't think I need to tell you guys that Joey Estes is a pretty easy cut. Cal Quantrill is a little bit more difficult because he has been pretty solid this season, but pretty rough stuff yesterday against the Reds. 5 runs on 4 hits, just 4 strikeouts over, well, 4 strikeouts in 2 innings, actually. I thought he pitched more than 2 innings, but that was all we got out of Quantrill yesterday. You know, he's been good, but how much are you really going to trust him, right? A guy who doesn't strike out anybody who pitches at Coors. I mean, maybe you use him as a streamer in deeper leagues, but I don't think there's any real need for Yahoo managers to hold on to him. 17% still. That feels pretty drastically high for somebody like Cal Quantrill. I do want to talk about Brian Baio before we get out of here for today. Yesterday was a very weird start from him. I did a very, very long write-up on my Patreon about him. If you guys want to check that out, there's also a link in the description of the episode for that. But yesterday was one of the weirder stat lines that we've seen this year. 5 1/3, 9 hits, 5 earned runs. You see that, you're thinking, this was garbage. You look at the second half of it, 11 strikeouts, 40% CSW, 22% swinging strike rate with 23 whiffs. I jokingly said on the show yesterday, you know, if Baio goes out there and he has 26 whiffs, maybe we have to have a conversation. He had 23 of them, so I think we maybe have a little bit of a conversation about it. He struggled in the first, allowed a couple of runs, settled down over the next 4 innings, and then Lawrence Butler just murdered the line with a 3-run homer in the 6th. I think it is still pretty encouraging to see those numbers. 11 strikeouts, 40 on the CSW, 22 swinging strike. You guys hear me rhyme these numbers off. You know at this point, if you didn't already, 22% swinging strike rates. You don't see that very often from anybody. Even if you're talking about the Tyler Glasnows, the Chris Sales of the world, you don't see those type of numbers. So is part of it that he's attacking the Oakland lineup and the brutality that is? Yeah, probably part of it is Oakland, but like what happened a few weeks ago when Pablo Lopez had that massive, like 14 strikeout game, we said, okay, if you want to equate that to what it would be against a good team, maybe knock a couple strikeouts off of it or whatever and say, okay, instead of 11 strikeouts, Baio was worthy of maybe 8 or something, and then you take 23 whiffs and knock it down to 17, 18 or something. If you want to go that route and say, look, if it was better competition, he wouldn't have had the same results. So I think you can look at it from that perspective. I think that it is pretty encouraging, though, to see him do this because most pitchers do not do this against Oakland. Like, you don't see this against any team, really. But I know that some people will write off good starts against bad teams because, well, it was a bad team. And while that should come into it to some extent, it's not like everybody goes and has 10-plus strikeouts against the Athletics. So there's still something there, I think, with Baio. He's had a couple of promising starts in a row. But at the same time, I think if you are talking a 10 or a 12-team league, he's still pretty volatile. I want to see the strikeouts more consistently and ideally come against some better teams because I don't think it should be ignored. You know, if you're facing a bunch of shit teams and destroying them, then that's something you have to you take into account. But Baio has been pretty bad this season as a whole. And having 2 good starts, I mean, yesterday it's kind of hard to argue good with the 5 earned runs, but positive outings against Miami and Oakland, I don't know if that's enough to buy him 10, 12 team viability going forward. Could he be? Maybe. But I'm not starting him against the Royals this weekend. That's his last start before the All-Star break. I have him in a couple of 15 team leagues because I held on for that Marlins start and I said, like, this is literally your last chance. He got that stay of execution. Now it's like, okay, like, I don't want to read too much into 1 home run because that's kind of the whole line here. If he throws a better pitch to Butler there, maybe he strikes him out or something. And maybe we're talking about 11 strikeouts and 2 earned runs, and we're not even seeing him as a drop today in that case. But I still think if you are talking shallow formats, there's a little too much volatility here on a start-to-start basis. Could the strikeouts, you know, just be here now? It's possible. Like, he had massive strikeout rates throughout his time in the minors. He was usually 30+% at times 35+% at the big league level. He has a 20.6% strikeout rate. So I don't really think with Brian Baio that this is all of a sudden now he's fixed. Oh, he's good now. He's just going to strike out a bunch of guys and be a great pitcher. Like, I think that would be foolish to look at it from that perspective. But I don't want to ignore the encouraging signs either. With the encouraging signs, he's a hold in 15-team leagues for me. And you see what goes on over the next few weeks after the All-Star break. If he does well against the Royals in that last start, then we have a pretty interesting conversation over the All-Star break about what he looks like in the second half. But I just think at this point in time, I need to see a little more before I'm willing to say, you know what, I'm going to buy back into Bayo. He's a 10-team guy. He's a 12-team guy. There's still problems. You know, we spent time earlier talking about Rafaela and how great the Boston Park is for hitters. It's a nightmare for pitchers. And when I did a show with Eno Saris in January with Eno and Nick, it was my 500th podcast on the old show, and he was talking about some conversations he'd had with Red Sox pitchers about how difficult it is to pitch in that park. There's the mental aspect of something. I can't remember exactly what the point was Eno made, but the backstop looks a little different. It's more deceptive than it is in different parks. You obviously have that monster in left field, which is pretty damn close to home plate, and a lot of right-handed power is going to play up there. So it's not a great situation overall for Bayo. There's not a massive fantasy carrying tool, as I like to say. There's no big strikeouts. He's not a massive ratio guy at all. In fact, he has a 1.49 whip on the season to go along with a 5.40 ERA, so he's not really a ratio guy in any sense of the word. But I do think there is some promise here that stops me from fully writing him off. If we'd seen these last two starts and he just got the shit kicked out of him, no strikeouts, he's walking everybody, then I would have been like, okay, you know what? This is not the year for Brian Bayo. But a couple of starts without reading too much into it, definitely a step in the right direction. But all that said, I think if you're in a 10-team league and you're holding him still, it's probably not going to play out for you unless it's a very, very deep 10-team league. I think you got to be talking about an AL-only, deep 12, 15-team league where you're still holding him. But in those really shallow formats, I don't have a problem saying goodbye to Brian Bayo. But that will do it for us, guys. I really appreciate all of you hanging out. We're closing in on 50 shows. If you haven't done so already, hit that rating and review. Subscribe to the podcast. Hit us with 5 stars. Do all that stuff. That really does help out the algorithm. Now, I teased it a couple days ago, but we have a very fun guest coming on the show on Friday. You probably know him if you are somebody who has consumed fantasy baseball content over the last few seasons, for the last, I don't know how long he's been around in the game, maybe 6-7 years of doing content. He's kind of taken a step back this season, but I have convinced him to come out of his quote-unquote podcasting retirement to do a show on Friday. And that is Bat Flip Crazy. That is Toby Gavon, who is a really, really well-known fantasy baseball player, high-stakes player specifically. If you guys have seen any of that Champions League stuff on the NFBC site this year, Toby was one of the creators of that tournament. It's a draft champions, an online championship, and a main event that you have to play out all those leagues, and then it adds up the total of all the points. There's a lot of you right now who are sitting there thinking, what the hell is this guy talking about? It's a UEFA Champions League. If any of you are into soccer, it's like a Champions League style fantasy baseball tournament, essentially, to determine the best high stakes player every single year based on the 3 major tournaments that the NFBC offers. I'm going to let Toby explain it in a lot more depth on Friday because I think he'll do a much better job than I will because he was, you know, founded the damn thing. But it's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to move away from the player discussion a little bit because on this show, every single day, we go through player debates. We talk about discussions on this guy's good, this guy's bad, whatever. We're going to talk a lot more about strategy on Friday. I'm going to try and squeeze in the usual waiver wire show. It's going to be a busy day for me because, as I mentioned yesterday, I'm hosting Leading Off with Joe Pizzapia the next couple days as well, and I also produce that show, so it's going to be a busy couple days. I'm going to try and squeak in the typical waiver wire show and the news recap show as well. But it's going to be fun to kind of mix it up a little bit. We're going to talk with Toby about his history in fantasy baseball. We're going to talk about his process, how his teams have done this year, how he keeps track of the madness in season, the mindset for somebody competing for their own league versus an overall championship. If you guys saw the episode I did last year with Mike Kurland and Rob Silver, it's kind of similar themes thematically to that episode. A lot more strategy than specific player talk. Maybe we'll throw in a couple discussions about players, but I am really looking forward to that one. It's been in the works for more than a month now. Toby was on vacation. He is back, and we are going to be getting him to dust off that dust off the mic because I don't think Toby's done a show since the preseason. So this one will be a lot of fun. He's a great dude I got to meet in Arizona. We got to have a meal or two together. Awesome dude who was introduced to me by a mutual friend, Vlad Sedler. So that is going to be a lot of fun on Friday. I have rambled way longer than I anticipated. I apologize here. We're approaching the hour mark. I will let you guys go. Get on with your day. Reminder, JoelRico99, if you guys aren't following over on the Twitter. The Gunnar Henderson prop is there on Underdog. So if you guys have not already checked it out, over one home run, over 0.5 homers is what he needs to get in the Derby for that play to hit. Make sure you're using code Joe99 and check all that out in the description of the episode. I will leave it there and quit rambling. Guys, until tomorrow, take care and have yourself a great night.